Some folks like to get away, take a holiday from the neighborhood, have a flight to Miami Beach or to Hollywood. Hollywood, me, I'm taking a Greyhound on the Hudson River line.
Yeah,
I'm in the New York state of mind.
Yes. Yes, yes. Welcome, welcome.
Some folks like to get away.
And welcome. Sorry for that sharp cut. Good evening and welcome to New York State of Mind, Reach Out America Network. My name is Carl Gottstein, and tonight I'm going to host the author, Joseph Gilbert. He's going to join us, and he's going to join us in a couple of minutes and talk about his new book, of Faith and Freedom, How Cultural Marxism and Political Correctness Hijacked America and How to Take America Back. We have other guests on with us tonight. Judy Pepinella will be back from the down south of New York, the Long Island area. And I'm also looking for New York patriots interested in contributing in other regions of New York. So if you're out there in West New York or North New York or South New York and you want to share what New York State of Mind is in your neck of the woods, why don't you, hook up with me and we can share it together. And let's break some news stories together. I can hear a caller in there. I think it's Joe. Is that you in there? Joe Gilbert,
yes,
is that you
I'm
on the line? Joe,
yes,
I thought
it is, Carl.
Good, sir. I heard you in there. Listen, let's get right to you. We could do more of the other intro later. Let's get right to you. You're an amazing and accomplished individual. I don't want to get into your entire bio. I'll let you tell a little more about yourself when we get started, but as far as I'm concerned, you're an accomplished American, a patriot. You've recently written a book that I think everybody in America should basically learn from. I'd like you to, tell us a little bit about your background first, Joe, and then we can get into your book. How's that?
Okay, sure. Well, I joined the Army in 1985. I grew up in Ogdensburg, up on the Canadian border in St. Lawrence County, and then I just recently retired in 2010 and served in Germany on the Iron Curtain and in Korea on the DMZ, did 3 tours in Iraq, and then finally came home and joined the civilian life in 2010, and I was a director of emergency services for St. Lawrence County, and now a small businessman, and own a retail store in Jefferson County, and now first-time author.
Well, I got to say, it's a wonderful life you're living, sir. I want to start at the beginning. You said you're in the military. I understand you serve in the military and intelligence. So you basically picked up tradecraft and to understand how important information is. And so what you're sharing with us basically is information that we need to know. I hate to jump all the way through the rest of your life, but basically it's going back from your military service. It seems to me you're recognizing things that are going on in the United States, and you're taking information that we need to know, and you're sharing it with us. Basically, everything you've written and everything you've said, I completely share and agree with. But you wrote it first, so I want to hear it out of your mouth. The wonderful sentence, how cultural Marxism and political correctness hijacked America and how to take it back. This is a sentence that is at one time, at part of you is just, taken aback at the thought of this, but we know it's true. It's instantly felt as the truth. The how to take it back is the very hopeful part. I'd like to talk about first how you believe cultural Marxism and political correctness hijacked America. I'm not going to stay with you too much on that because I think we can pretty quickly come to the assumption that is the correct truth. I want to, after that, move quickly past into how to take it back. I think that's the most important part of what you've written. So take us to the beginning, why you wrote the book, and what led you to this conclusion that Marxism and political correctness hijacked America, if you would, Joe.
Okay, well, what I did was, I was, like you said, I was an intelligence in the military, and I applied the same analytical skills that I was taught in the military to use to analyze the enemy, what they had, what they have done, what they're going to do, and why, most importantly. And I took all of the same processes and I applied it to the American political scene, and most importantly, the cultural, because everything that we're seeing transpire now in America seems to be completely contrary, upside down, to what our traditions and our history and our values would seem to dictate.
Amen. And
the first thought that came to mind was, okay, why is this? How did this come about?
Sure.
And then through my research, that I found, disturbingly, that it was on purpose. that there was a deliberate move starting in after World War One to usurp the culture, the Western civilization, and pull our traditions and values and our heritage, national identity, all of that out of the country, because they were wondering why, even after the horrors of World War One, that the peasants, the commoners, us, why we didn't rise up against our government like they did in Russia, like they did in the Soviet Union. And
right.
What the small group of then, a small group of intellectuals had founded the Institute for Social Research, and what they came about, and their answer was that it was our culture. It was too strong. Our traditions of spirituality and faith in God and family and our traditions and values was too deeply rooted within us to allow that jump from freedom and liberty that we have always known since the revolution to the new revolution that they wanted, which was the Marxist revolution. They couldn't understand why that happened. And so
let me stop you for a minute. So what you're saying is that basically the American culture and who we were in the 50s and the 40s and the 30s and the 20s, that was basically a shield against and a buttress for freedom that somehow protected
yes.
us. Can you get into that a little bit?
Absolutely. And it came down to this: the basic value and worth of the individual citizen, and how it was enshrined in our faith in religion and God. Because just like it says in the Declaration of Independence, that we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights. And that's what protected them. They couldn't be changed, altered, taken away by any man or government or judge, because they didn't come from them. And so, therefore, in order for our rights to be willingly surrendered, that belief that they were endowed by our Creator had to go. And so that became their first target.
Very good.
And that
okay.
turned into the modern political correctness.
Okay, so can you give me some idea who benefits if America falls, if cultural Marxism and political correctness literally hijacks America? Who benefits from that other than, you know, perhaps the politicians that are elected by feeding this red meat to the ignorant masses? Who else benefits from that?
I'll answer that question by giving you an example. If you remember back to the Occupy, it's not that far back, the Occupy Wall Street movement.
Sure.
That the minions, the foot soldiers, they lived in the tents in the park.
Right, and crapped in the park, too, and had sex in the park and lived like animals, basically.
Right. However, it was the power brokers, the guys in charge, they had the suite in the hotel room.
Right, right.
And so socialism is always invariably for us, the people. It's not for the socialists.
Right.
Even in the Russian day.
Well, that would explain why you have people like Al Gore telling us the sky is falling and please, that your carbon footprint is everything, while he flies off in a 747. That would explain that, with a big home.
Correct.
With all the right and all the electricity going on in his mansion. Meanwhile, you should live in a shoebox because you have a large footprint. The hypocrisy is astounding. Yeah.
Yes. Your pickup truck is evil. His private jet is just fine.
Right. So I'm saying I understand there are people within our system, within our country, who benefit from this form of I hate to even call it politics because it's the lowest form of politics, but and the politics that we're absolutely warned against by our founders. This is absolutely – they represent – these folks represent what we were warned against over and over again. But what I'm trying to take you is off this continent. It seems to me that a lot of this stuff comes from external. Like, for instance, you know, we have them talking about all this gun control stuff, and it comes right out of the the United Nations and other countries. And I don't want to name specifically, but do you think that there are – other nations who would benefit from our, you know, perhaps not being as strong as we are, and if we took a back seat, perhaps?
Well, absolutely, because global redistribution is one of their top agenda items.
Right, and it's redistributing it from us to them, basically, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, see, because in their modern liberal mind, there is everyone is either an oppressor or a victim. And so
right.
if they can identify us as a nation as the oppressors, then, of course, everyone else must be a victim. And
well,
therefore, if there are victims, then there must be reparations.
Right. And that comes under the political correctness and how it's been hijacked and Marxism and all that. So I think it's fair to say most people looking at this dispassionately and independently and not on anybody's side would say that political correctness has hijacked America. And that can be evidenced by the fact that presidential candidates like Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders are seen as so, you know, different because they seem to be speaking in candor, in language you understand and directly, rather than in, you know, riddles and circles. So, you know,
right.
So let's get past that. How to take it back. Now, that's the key part that I thought was very inspirational. The fact that you state that right out there, how to take it back. How do we take it back, Joe? What do we do?
Okay. If you're going to rebuild a house, you have to start with a foundation. You have
right.
to start with the cinder box in the basement. You can't start with the roof. You can't start with the putting the furniture in. You've got to start with the very foundation. And I think that you will probably agree, as we look at incidents like Baltimore and Ferguson and, everything from drug use that they were talking about in New Hampshire and whatever, that the very first building block is our families. And it starts actually even before that in the faith of every individual. Now, they say now, of course, that America is not a Christian nation, but if they can effectively remove God from the family, what they do is remove soul from the person. If they remove the soul from the person, then you have no more intrinsic worth than a dog or a worm or a bird.
Right.
And so that's where it needs to start. That's the very beginning of it. And then strong families build strong communities. And
right.
then politically, we have to decentralize the power. I think that more than 90% of all governments should come from people you can walk down the street and talk to.
Sure.
As it was supposed to be. The federal government is supposed to be nearly inconsequential to your life.
Right.
Because
so go ahead. No, go ahead, Joe.
They only have 18 powers. The federal government is allowed to make law and preside over 18 items. That's it. And everything else, if it needs to be done, should be done at the state level or at the local level.
So you're speaking of the enumerated powers of the federal government. So do you think that this is a question, it's like a Captain Obvious question. Do you think that the federal government currently is going beyond its mandate?
Oh, my goodness, in every aspect and every facet of your life. They
right.
they tell you what your kids are going to have for lunch at school, what kind of light bulb you're going to use in your bathroom, what your car can be made out of, what your pillows can be made out of. There is not one thing that you do, not one thing that you eat at the breakfast table, the dinner table, what TV you watch, every single aspect of your life the federal government has its fingers in.
Right, and that's not what this country was formed to be, am I right? That we're supposed to have those choices and decisions at a state level, if at all. They should be reserved to the person.
Yes.
Secondly, reserved to the state. Thirdly, reserved to the federal government. I think you're 100% right about God and country. The, I'm not saying you can't be a moral person and be an atheist, but I will say that if you have a code to go by and you have to make it all up yourself as you go along, and you're not taking in the wisdom of thousands of years and many, many generations of good people that have come before you and studying some of their good books, then you're liable to make some of the same mistakes that have been made and taught lessons, you know, the lessons in the Bible and the other holy books teach us about.
Right.
America was formed as a Judeo-Christian nation, Joe. I think you'd agree
with
that, right? Right. So
Absolutely.
we were formed with a Judeo-Christian ethos and with the assumption that people that were going to be running our government or going to be in charge of our institutions were going to share that ethos. And there's many examples where that was the way it was in the beginning, and there's many examples where that is not the way it is now. So you're saying that that is essentially where the rubber meets the mat, that when we take our code, our Judeo-Christian code out, then we allow them to divide our families, then we allow them to have some of the hopelessness that's gone on for these last several generations. And I couldn't agree with you more. I really couldn't agree with you more. I think it's remarkable that someone who's got an eye like you do came to that conclusion, and there's not 1,000 people out there that aren't writing the same exact book, because this is something that's got to be said, it's meant to be said, needs to be said, everybody has to read it. Now, once we embrace cultural Marxism and political correctness have hijacked our country, and that there are many, many, many examples and many reasons why it's a huge problem, And then we decide how to take it back is by, you know, getting back to God, getting back to family, respecting the traditions that we once respected. I think that that is the reason why politics are now, if you'll allow me, are coming kind of full circle, where we have, you know, literally both parties being rejected because both parties are allowing this deterioration and nobody is really, you know, stopping it dead in its tracks. I mean, I got to say, I'm a registered Republican. I do lean right of center. And the Republican Party often disappoints me, often makes promises, to me to do just the things that you're talking about, and then goes in there and jumps right back in bed with these self-same Marxists and starts speaking. Go ahead.
Yeah. I talk about that in the book too, where that even when they have the power to fix the problem, they don't. And because they would rather capitalize on the existence of the problem than fix it. All
yep.
the time, I'm a registered Republican too, but all the time I get emails and fundraisers from the RNC saying, oh my goodness, look what Obama did, send me $50.
Right.
Even when they have the power right today without my $50 to fix it or to block it or to stop it, they would rather have my $50 and let the problem persist.
Well, let's bring it on home. Here in the state of New York, we have some of the, you know, the struggles that have been going on here. They're almost biblical in nature, in that they're ongoing forever and ever and generation after generation. There seems to be an intergenerational struggle to disarm the New Yorker incrementally. There's literally 25 pages of little tiny incremental firearms, anti-firearms laws that are being introduced this year. And every single year, there's always a booklet of them. We can approve maybe one or two things like, you know, allow somebody to have a gun lock or something. It's only simple things. They really are trying to go out of their way to incrementally make it nearly impossible to exercise your Second Amendment. When you exercise your First Amendment here, you are told things by the governor of New York. This is not the place for you. This isn't your home. This isn't your, you know what I'm talking about, the statement he made where
yeah.
if you're conservative or pro-life or pro-2A or pro-whatever, you know, this is not the place for you. As if he can wave his wand and say people who disagree with him must vanish. This is the kind of thing we're under. Now, the SAFE Act is a piece of legislation that was passed here, basically without the consent of many of us, but some of us in the Republican Party had to make it possible for that to happen. And then once they allowed it to happen, just like with gay marriage, they turn around and raise money on help us defeat the SAFE Act, send us $10. You know?
Yeah,
well, we wouldn't have a SAFE Act if they didn't allow it. Do you think this is something that goes on often, and do you think it's something that it's kind of like a trick they play on us, a Jedi mind trick or something? Is it going on all at once? Am I the only one seeing this, what I'm saying, Joe? Have you seen this more than once?
No. Yeah. Oh, I've absolutely seen this, yes. And, it should be noted that, like in the beginning, our rights are enshrined by God, not by a judge, not by a governor. And so they can write a law that says, you know, you cannot speak or you cannot attend church or, you know, you have no privacy and you have no security in your persons or papers. It doesn't make it right and it doesn't make it legal. And it actually... In accordance with this nation's founding and jurisprudence from before, it can be ignored. We can say that is unconstitutional. I'm going to ignore it. It's not.
Well, that's what I understand. I've heard this from a lot of liberty-minded people, and I've also heard this other point of view, and I want you to hear this out, Joe, and then tell me what you think. From what I understand, that a law that is passed lawfully, by lawfully I mean, you know, the regular suspects get together and they vote on something, and then the other regular suspect, the governor, signs it, or the president, whoever. For instance, let's say they got together and they all signed tomorrow, guns are outlawed in New York, period. They're outlawed. You and I and a bunch of others would hop up and down and say, hey, that violates the spirit and the letter of the Constitution. You know, you mustn't do that. That's terrible. That's awful. But we can hop up and down all we want, because if they say that, until it is challenged in a court of law, they can enforce it. Now, what would happen is like somebody, some wise young lawyer jumps up and says, it's anti-constitution, it's against Constitution, goes to the court. The judge puts an injunction on it until it goes to court and all that different stuff. And so you go through all these mechanisms. But the moment that it's signed, it doesn't matter if you and I would both agree that this is a violation of what we would call constitutional law. From the moment it is signed, it becomes constitutional. It is now, like the SAFE Act, people say it up and down. They get all excited about it. It's not constitutional, blah, blah, blah. Well, you know what? Until you take it to court and you defeat it on the fact that it's not constitutional, it is inherently constitutional as long as it is signed into law by a governor and a legislative body. This makes people crazy. They can't seem to grasp this. I think that you do. You're a very intelligent person, so you understand the letter of the law and what I'm trying to say. I'm sure of it. What I'm trying to get to is, do you think that part of the problem is that we don't really have proper intelligence? We don't properly understand what we're talking about many times, and so we get caught up in these fights and we kind of miss the mark. So we're shooting and we're fighting and we're wrestling hard, but when it comes down to where our energy comes, that way just misses the mark. So we have to have proper intelligence. We have to have a proper cohesive plan, and we have to know where we're going to get it back. It doesn't just happen by chance. So what I'm asking you is, if tomorrow you're king of the world, where do you start? Yep. Where do you start, Joe? And what do you go after to try to get this? In other words, if we were all listening to you right now, and we said, listen, what's Joe's plan? Let's do it. Did you write about that? Okay, so
yes, I did.
Tell me where you went with it, if you would.
Okay, well, then they're only able to get away with that kind of thing because of the crisis of the moment mentality. They can say, oh, my goodness, look at the shooting at Sandy Hook. Something must be done. Or look at the climate change, and so something must be done. Look at this crisis of the moment.
Right.
We have to act now. We don't have time to wait. And then,
or think.
Right. So it's got to start in the schools because our kids today are not taught the Constitution. They're not taught civics. They're not taught what their freedoms are. They're not taught the limitations of government.
They don't even say the Statue of Liberty anymore, I don't think. I mean, we used to say the Pledge of Liberty, Pledge of Allegiance, and we used to put our hand on our heart and say it to the flag every morning when we started class. I think we also had a morning prayer, if I remember, but I think that's because I went to Catholic school. But anyway, from what I understand, they don't do that anymore because it has the word God in it, so they don't say under God. You think that, but you honestly believe that the linchpin is the Almighty, is the inclusion of that the concept of rights under God, that these are God granted, they are enumerated, and there's the fact that that's inviolate, and you can count on that, and that kind of in a way institutes, you know, a pro religiosity in some way. It says Americans are believers. That's what it says. Basically.
Well, it does two things. It does two things. The first thing it does is give you an intrinsic value above government.
Right.
That because you are a precious creation of a supreme creator, that you are free. Your natural state is a free man, a free citizen.
In dominion. With dominion, right.
And
so let me stop you right there. That means real quick, and I don't want you to finish your thought, Joe, but I got to jump in because it just dawned on me. That means that if it's a choice between the river smelt and the farmer, the water goes to the farmer, not the smelt. That's what that means.
Right.
It's simple as that. And take that everywhere. That means all of their Agenda 21 stuff's out the window because it's all for stuff like trees and smelt and, you know, hugging other things other than us.
And because you are, your natural state is a precious creation of God that only to perform a certain set of collective functions did we create a government to work for us.
A limited form, very limited.
Yeah. And secondly, that same religious founding gives us an absolute right and wrong in order to judge things by. And so we can say an action that you cannot have, by eminent. The person I was talking to actually say, well, I'm sure in their belief system, they think they're doing the right thing. And that comes from the education system. Carl? Carl, you still there?
I'm still here, Carl. It's Judy.
Yeah, but
hey, Carl, it's Judy. Can you hear me?
Hey, Carl, are you there? It's Raquel. Okay. Judy, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Awesome.
Can anyone hear me?
Yes, I can. Who is that?
Okay.
Carl, are you there? It's Raquel. Okay.
This is Joe.
Hey, Joe.
Joe Gilbert.
I just I was listening in on the program, and I think that Carl is having some technical difficulties.
Right, I think he is too.
Yeah, I think he was like kind of thrown off online, and then once that happens, it sort of kind of go on dead air. But I'm in the studio right now, and we can continue the program until Carl comes back
okay.
in.
All right, I'm
sure.
here.
Okay, cool. So hi, Judy. How are you?
I'm doing well, Raquel. Thank you for all you're doing. Love your voice and greatly appreciate it. Just something
Thank
I wanted
you.
To say to Joe. I was appreciating everything he was saying, especially with the remark about Zuccotti Park and the socialists, the workers were in the field and the others were in the hotel rooms. I had applied on Craigslist, just so you can know who I am, Joe. My name's Judy Pepin.